Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'll come back all the time.
All the time?
Did a great job. She's a good kid.
We did.
What are they doing next door?
I guess the neighbors are making up.
Leave it open.
Think we can take them?
It's worth a try.
Just us now.
5, 6, 4. I heard noises.
What kind of noises were?
At the house, I was scared.
Claire's hearing things. What are you hearing?
Voices, whispering, a picture fell. Missing girl. Do you remember this?
No.
I stopped at this cafe to get a coffee and I see Norman, but he wasn't alone. Look at this. Doesn't that look exactly like a face? And there's a hand, see?
Someone who's very close to me seems to be in contact with some kind of entity or spirit.
There's a ghost in my house.
Any idea what she wants?
Hello, welcome to another episode of Rewatchability. It's the show where we rewatch movies and TV shows we haven't seen in a while to see how they hold up today. I'm J.M. McNabb. I'm joined, as always, by...
Robert LaRonde.
And Blaine Waters.
And we've got a very special episode for you this week. So I know we say that every week, and they usually end with crushing disappointment. But this week, okay, it's probably not going to be any different, but I still think you should listen.
Let's begin with crushing disappointment. Let's start that way.
Yeah.
And then we can only go up from there, right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, no, I'm excited to, I think we'll have a good chat about the 2000 Robert Zemeckis chiller, What Lies Beneath.
Ooh.
It's probably just like a basement.
Sounds like it has vodka in it.
It's it was a big movie at the time, the year 2000. So it was 20 years ago, just I think last week. So there have been, you know, I've seen a few articles pop up. Maybe we'll talk about some of them, some retrospectives. People are commemorating the release of this movie. So I thought maybe we should take a look at it as well. Before we get to that, I do want to thank all of the people who donate at patreon.com/rewatchability. They help keep the show going. You get the show early and commercial free. And thank you so much to everyone that does that. I also should mention that we're an Entertainment One podcast and they also help us out. I mean, we don't get to record there anymore because of the pandemic.
Hey, yeah. But, you know. What have you done for us lately?
Well, I think they host the show still and, you know, they could easily destroy it if they wanted, but they don't. So thank you. Well, let's talk about What Lies Beneath, because like I said, it was a big hit movie for some reason in 2000.
They didn't have Marvels.
That's right. Before the Marvels and the DCs. Blaine, when did you first see What Lies Beneath? Did you go see it in the theater?
I don't know if I did. The only thing I remember from this movie is that bathtub scene. Because it was so harrowing when I watched it the first time. I must have gone to see it in the theater, but probably much later after it had been a while. This wasn't a movie that was like you saw the trailer and you're like, I have to go see that opening night. Like Michelle Pfeiffer and Harrison Ford are a married couple on a boat. Like I need to go see them do nothing.
That sounds great.
give it a few years.
Yeah, I know. So I remember this movie. And when you suggested it, I did really want to see it because I remember it being pretty hokey. But then that one scene in the bathtub, I was like, that was such a good scene from what I remember, her little toes trying to grab the plug or whatever. And so I was like, maybe there's more to it than I remember, because I was like, you know, a teenager and didn't appreciate it. And then when I looked it up, I saw that it was Zemeckis, and I love Zemeckis. So this has to be good.
Yeah, he has a flawless track record.
I thought that about every Robert Zemeckis movie since. What about you, Rob? When did you see it?
I saw it, I think, shortly after it was released on the Movie Network. And I remember at the time, if you had the Movie Network, they would send you the guide still. It was like a printed guide with the listings of all the movies. And I really loved looking through the guide, actually more than watching the Movie Network sometimes. But I remember that they had like the full color like spread of like the bathtub shot with the fingers over the rim, and I remember that being very striking. And I did see the movie. I only caught the last part of it, but I do remember the bathtub scene and also just Harrison Ford's performance. I mean, spoiler alert: is it okay to spoil the twist of the movie? Should we just like? Well, anyway, the twist of the movie is what
we're
going to
spoil
me.
It. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I just was surprised at how close a talker he was the entire goddamn movie. He's like appears behind everyone all the time. Like, oh, God. There.
Yeah, that's the only way you can hear what he's saying. He mumbles everything.
Yeah.
I'm Harrison Ford.
I mean, we're going to spoil the movie because we spoil every movie. We're going to talk about it. It's 20 years old, but.
That's
the
fair.
Movie, as we'll talk about, was spoiled by like the marketing. Like,
right.
The trailer gives away almost everything. Well, unlike you guys who don't appreciate fine films, I did go see it in the cinema.
Like opening night?
It wasn't opening night, but it was like, you know, there was a crowd. It was pretty early on. I don't know why. I think there was just...
Wait, you don't know why there was a crowd or why you went to see it?
No, I don't know. I think I just saw every movie, to be honest. But there was something in the air at that time. This was the year after The Sixth Sense had come out.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And also a movie that I love that we should do sometime, Stir of Echoes, had come out the year before.
Yeah,
we should definitely do Stir of Echoes.
So there was this kind of sense of like, you know, an emergence of like a new... American ghost story blockbuster style, or not even style, but more that audiences were ready to embrace it in a big way. Because this was a big movie. This made like $300 million at the box office.
That's insane.
That's ridiculous.
It's a movie essentially about like two middle-aged people plotting around their house.
And you know what? I appreciate that more now.
Yeah.
Like I was, you know, I watched the bathtub scenes and I just think like, that looks really nice. She's comfy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get into what actually happens in this movie, which I'm just going to say is not a lot.
It's a 2-hour movie where nothing happens.
Yeah.
I almost like called my brother-in-law, who's a physicist, and asked how it's possible that every time I paused this movie, there was 40 minutes left. it seemed to defy time itself. It was so long. Okay, but Rob, what happened in this movie?
Okay, I mean, it starts with a shot of some murky water, and you're like, hey, what lies beneath there? You might be thinking Cocoons if you listened to last week's episode, but it's not. It's just Michelle Pfeiffer taking a bath, and she's daydreaming. She's having, like, these thoughts of this murky, you know, this murky water. There's something unsettling down there. And she is Claire Spencer. She is married to Harrison Ford, whose name is Norman Spencer. And they've got, like, a pretty good life for middle-aged people. Two big things is that they recently moved into a new house. It's a big thing. And also their daughter is going away to college. So that's a huge moment for them. And in particular, Claire is having a bit of a hard time about it. It seems that she's kind of like a fragile sort of person. There's like a lot that seems to like throw her off pretty easily.
Well, it's not his daughter, is it?
Well, we don't find that out until later, I don't think.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, like, this movie sort of is good at trickling out information for us because it gives us this perfect picture at first, and then we find out more. So, like, for example, Claire, she is thinking about her daughter, and she sees, like, her old Juilliard shirt, and then she gets feeling nostalgic, so she goes down to the basement and starts looking through photo albums. And we see all these photos of her life, which sort of, like, are clues to, like, who she is. Who are these people in these photos? There's a guy with, like some sort of, like, weird mullet, and you're like, who is this man? We never find out. But
what lies beneath two? The tale of mullet guy.
Yeah. But while she's down there, she gets upset. All these other photos spill out, including one of a car that has been wrecked. It's like a photo taken for insurance purposes. And this sort of gets her upset. And so she goes out.
Also, why is she keeping like insurance photos in a memory book? Like, like what? It's like, oh, what a tender, lovely memory I'll put beside my
Okay. My first car accident.
This album's baby photos / auto wrecks. So I know.
You can just label it under disasters. That's fine.
You can just label it under consequences from drinking.
And... That's better. That's better.
But while she's upset, she hears the neighbor next door crying. And so she goes and sort of asks to see what's up. And this woman is behind her fence. She can't really get to her. And she just says a bunch of mysterious stuff that sounds like she's really terrified. And it sort of sounds like her husband is, you know, maybe going to murder her.
It's like she's in a horror version of Tool Time or Home Improvement or whatever. You never see this woman's face talking behind the fence.
He's gonna kill me.
Wilson behind there.
But this coincides with like a bunch of other freaky stuff happening to her. Like there's all the freaky house shit, like lights flickering, and then like at one point like the radio comes on and it's very spooky music playing.
She sounds like she has a wiring problem and a front door lock that's faulty. It just looks like home repairs are needed. That's all. This.
Yeah, 2 hours with a contractor could have fixed everything.
Yeah, 2 hours with a contractor and just installing a shower head. This movie would have been done.
Yeah. But so she tells Harrison Ford, like, I think something has happened to this woman because she doesn't see him. And actually, one night she is up because she's so anxious playing solitaire at night. Only person in the world to not play solitaire at the office. And she happens to see through the window the husband next door carrying something body-shaped to his car. So that's suspicious.
It's also like wrapped in plastic and then duct taped. Like, who does that for anything but a body? It's insane.
You get some really bad stains in that carpet, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Spaghetti sauce.
And I like the beginning of it. It's really slow, but I like the beginning because it's like, I love the suburban, what are our neighbors up to, the burbs kind of thing of it.
For sure.
I love that in a movie. And this seemed like kind of where that movie was going. Like, let's really tune into the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But then that goes away like half an hour in.
Well, yeah, because she...
But also, you know, just in terms of the storytelling, like, you know it's not going to be the neighbors because, like you said, you see him carrying out what looks like a body. Like, I mean, in Rear Window, they didn't see Jimmy Stewart literally see, like, a guy carrying a corpse out the door because... That would be, yeah. You know, I just mean like if it was going to ultimately be them, you know it's a red herring, not just because you saw in the trailer that it totally was, but like it's so obviously not going to be that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's so not that so fast in this movie that I just wanted more of the neighbor stuff because also that actress is really good.
Yeah.
It's Miranda Otto.
Yeah,
she's great.
What's she from?
And she was in the Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh.
That's where I know her from.
And probably some other stuff.
Yeah.
And her husband is played by James Remar.
Yes. He's a guy.
Yeah. And that one of the funniest things in this movie is because she starts getting nosy about them.
Mm-hmm. And Harrison Ford doesn't want her to. He's like, you know, don't look into this. Don't embarrass me.
Stop asking questions about anything.
And she goes poking around there with like a gift basket. Mm-hmm. And she eventually gives it to James Remar, who's super creepy about it. Like, like she's like, oh, welcome to the neighborhood. And he's like, I'm busy right now. Like, he's so dismissive and ominous. And then later that night, she sees him on his porch. Just like, it's not just that he simply threw out the gift basket that she brought over. He, like, literally stands on his front porch and starts chucking everything that was in the gift basket in different directions in his yard. Like, the most dramatic. It was like a teenager wanting to make, like, a really big show. Of something, yeah. You know?
It's so funny because he like walks out onto the his deck and then finds the light in order to do this. It's like what?
Yeah,
okay, he found the X on the ground.
Yeah,
but then he takes like the bottle out of the basket too and goes throw it and goes no. This is for my dependencies. And then he walks back in.
It's my murder juice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we find out that he's not the killer, but I'm pretty sure he is a killer, just not totally of his wife. Because later, you know, after Harrison Ford has been like, hey, stop bothering me with this. I am really busy with my talk. They see the guy at the college because he's a colleague, and she freaks out. She goes right up to him and she makes a scene. She's like, ah, I know that you killed your wife and da da da, and everyone's turning and looking, and then the wife comes to his side, and it's embarrassing when that happens, as you might know.
You think you're smart, don't you? You think you got away with it? Well, I know you killed her, you murdering son of a bitch!
Who?
Don't give me that shit. Your wife.
I'm sorry, she's very upset. I'm not forgetting this place. I didn't kill my wife. Are you all right?
I'm so attuned to like movies, I was like, it's not really the wife because we didn't see her.
Yeah.
We only saw her in flashes. So I think there is a murder. I think he did murder his wife. This woman's just acting the part.
That's like a new
yeah,
wife.
Yeah, that should have been like the... that should have been like the Marvel post-credit scene where it's right. Just like cuts to that guy and it's like he totally killed his wife. I mean, this was written by a star of the Marvel movies, which we'll get into.
Right, but yes.
He could have kind of teed that up. One thing we skipped over is a fantastic scene when she goes to visit Harrison Ford in the office to tell him all this.
Right.
And she kind of like pauses to hover by two scientists who are, because he's like a researcher, and they're developing this kind of chemical that like sedates people for like 5 to 10 minutes. And it's like, well, they live through it. And it's like, does it just work on mice? Like, no, all mammals. And
especially wives.
Like, nosy ones.
5 to 10 minutes, just long enough to drown in the bathtub.
But it was like that scene from Wayne's World where like Chris Farley explains everywhere the record executive is going to be, or like it felt like a video game where like your character can't move because they have to
cutscene
stay there, yeah. And like yeah, like listen to some piece of information. It was so
oh,
bad.
Oh yeah, it's like such a 90s holdover too, because it's like there's two scientists. You know, they're both in the lab coat. They're both performing experiments. But the woman scientist goes, how does things work? And the male scientist goes, let me explain to you, honey. And he, like, launches into it. It's so stupid. It's so stupid on so many levels.
And they're all smoking inside. And
right. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And then she goes in and tells Harrison Ford everything that's going on. And, okay, so, like... she's telling him about the ghost stuff. She's telling him about the neighbor stuff. So, okay, first of all, the neighbor thing is legitimately worrying. She saw a man carrying a body-shaped bag in the middle of the night and put it in his trunk. Like, wife or not, that's suspicious.
Yeah.
Two, she thinks there's a ghost in their house. So she's either, like, the best case scenario is she's being haunted. The worst case scenario is she's having some kind of mental breakdown. And then Harrison Ford's response to all of this is he's like, I get what's happening. This is all because of my research paper, isn't it? It's like, you don't want me to succeed, do you? Like, it's just the most, like, absurdly toxic reaction to everything she said.
Yeah.
I kind of get it a little bit. His, like, fragile male ego is just so thin that he's like, it's all about me and you hate me. She's like, I'm having a big crisis right now. Anyway.
Yeah, I get why that would be the idea, but it was just so cartoony.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then, she promptly, like, accuses that guy of murder. And then everything after that, like, they see that guy a few times, the James Remar character, and he's, like, super chill and friendly after that. She could have gone after him and been like, look, like, I get that you didn't murder your wife, but what was with the gift basket thing? Like,
yeah.
That was psychotic.
They should just have, like, a scene later in, like, a gift shop and him just being like, I hate all of this.
Wicker!
Throwing things off shelf.
My parents were killed by a gift basket.
Yeah. But she still thinks there's a ghost because there's still creepy things happening. Like, she has a seance with her friend Judy or Jody or whatever, and the candles flicker and the door creaks open, but it's just the dog. But then something really freaky happens. The ghost communicates through the solitaire leaderboard. It starts putting, like, the initials repeatedly, M-E-F, M-E-F, M-E-F. And that's how you know it's a young ghost, because old ghosts don't know how to use computers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess that happens before she accuses the guy, because she guesses that's the initials for the neighbor.
Right.
Because her initials are MF. Doesn't check about the middle name.
No.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Not thorough. Can I pause here to say how disappointed I was that this was a ghost story? Like, I remember it. I remember the tub thing. I remember, like, parts of it. I totally forgot that it was a ghost at all.
You thought it was, like, a hygiene film about bathing?
It's prescient. No, I thought that it was, like, he was kind of poisoning her with something from work. Like, I remembered that much. And, like, mm-hmm. that was part of, like, that she knew about the killing, but he was trying to, like, create amnesia with it, which is actually, you know, it's in the film. But I was just so disappointed that it was actually ghosts, because it seemed like the guy with the carrying the body to his trunk and throwing out the gift basket. It just seemed too, like, easy. And
yeah.
Too, like, I wanted it to be something. I wanted it to be all Harrison Ford in the end somehow.
Well, I mean,
and that would have made a good film, I feel.
What we find out is that she has all these memories that she doesn't have. There's, like, this, you know, after her accident the year before, there are things that she isn't quite clear about, including we find out that her husband had an affair with a student. So she, like, goes to see that person's mom and sort of asks about her. And Harrison Ford is still trickle-truthing her, being like, oh, yeah, she was a student of mine, but she disappeared. And, you know, I don't know anything about it. But then they sort of go to the town where the friend told her that she saw him and the girl, which is this town called Adamant, named after Adam Ant. And
I thought it's where Wolverine got his claws, but
maybe, could be.
Could be wrong.
And she manages to get them there, and she sees the sort of, earlier she found this key in a grate, and she sees the same symbol on the key. It's this giant thing in front of the box and key store, and so she knows that that's part of the thing, and so she starts figuring this out, and this is a big part of the mystery, because there's, like, this box at the bottom of their dock in the lake, and she dives into it.
Yeah, this is when, like, isn't this after she gets possessed for the first time?
Oh, yeah, we haven't talked about that. Because when she figures out that Harrison Ford had the affair with this girl, she... Oh, no, not even... She hasn't even figured out the affair part. She figures out that the ghost is this missing girl because there was an article about her, coincidentally, on the back of a newspaper clipping about Harrison Ford's dad or something that was in the house.
Yeah.
And...
Who put that there?
Yeah, I guess it's just so few news items happen in that town that it's they're bound to line up eventually, the two people. But so she goes to, like, the house and gets a lock of hair from the missing woman, because, like, the kooky best friend character gave her, like, a legit witchcraft book.
Yeah.
Well, like, also, how creepy is stealing a lock of this woman's dead daughter's hair.
I don't find it creepy.
Yeah, it just had to be a possession. Like, she could have stolen, like, an ashtray.
Like, anything that maybe the mother wouldn't dearly miss? Like, I don't know. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like a toothbrush or something.
Yeah, anything. One sock, you know? Socks go missing all the time. Just fuck. Ugh.
Yeah, that's how she could have freed the house elf. That was a bad joke. Also, J.K. Rowling's been canceled, so let's not even joke about that. Yeah, but so then she kind of, it was like accidentally gets possessed, right? Because she does this kind of spell to summon the ghost with the hair from the Necronomicon type book that her friend dropped off one day, and then she gets possessed, and
her eyes change color, which is how we know she's possessed. But she acts it, so we don't need that eye color change, because she acts it really well, actually.
It easy, huh? What's got into you? Ow!
What's the matter?
It's too rough.
Since when?
She also puts on this kind of red flowing dress, and she asks Harrison Ford if he's the keymaster.
She has a key. She has a key.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But he freaks out and like pushes her off when she says that, you know, aren't you afraid your wife will come home or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's about to stab him too with a letter opener
during coitus.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said that word.
That's when Michelle Pfeiffer, I guess when she kind of comes out of it and she realizes she repressed all these memories or forgot them because of the car accident that followed, that she walked in on the affair. This is a complicated movie.
I just watched this like a few hours ago, and I feel like I'm her character trying to piece together memories from years ago. Yeah. Like, it's just so long, and everything that happens is the same thing, just like over and over again. Like, she gets possessed, then she gets possessed again. Then she's, I think, possessed for days at one point. I don't know. Ugh. Sorry, Rob.
Yeah.
I don't know where we are in the rundown.
Well, I mean...
But I'm frustrated by it, goddammit.
Eventually, she figures out that Harrison Ford might have had something to do with this, despite his objections.
Yeah, It's that's what, you know, there's that part where she has all the clues in place. Like, we know who the ghost is. We know it's this missing girl. We know it was Harrison Ford had an affair with her. And then she's like, did you have anything to do with the disappearance? And he goes, yes. And she's like, oh. And then he's like, yeah, because, you know, I saw her like run off or something. And then she disappeared. So she probably killed herself. And like, oh, okay.
So no.
And then they just move on. And then I feel like that was the third or fourth time where I checked the playtime and it was like 40 minutes left. What?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
I thought there'd be like 10. Why are there not 10 minutes left? Why is she not gone already? And then there's this kind of like, her piecing together the clues, going to Adamant Town and finding the clue. But she doesn't need the clues. We know all this. It's just so strange. And also, again, like I've said before, they show you this in the trailer. Like, there's a part in the trailer
didn't
where
she
she's like...
the trailer?
Yeah. Well, also, like, I watched, like, Ebert and Roper put this on their, like, worst of the year list.
Oh, wow.
And I watched the clip, and they were like, yeah, like they showed the scene where she was like, you had an affair with this girl, and now she's haunting us. And he was like, this was in the like PR package that the studio sent. Like, so there was no suspense for more than half the movie. Like, we knew all this was going to happen. And so there's just like, yes, the last kind of sequence, which we'll talk about, has suspense the way it's filmed, but it kind of like, every time they set up a situation that could have suspense, they kind of like render it inert somehow. You know what I mean?
But I love Zemeckis's directing here and there. Like, he does finally prick her with the toxin that paralyzes her, and she's crawling away, and the camera goes forward, and then underneath the floor to show him speaking to her ear. And it's that sort of stuff that, like, we're not supposed to be seeing it this way, that gives you that, like, little bit of eeriness to it that I really loved in his direction. I just wish there was less of the whole movie to make those parts pop.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, and then so finally is the bathtub scene, which we talked about, where, you know, he's going to drown her and she's paralyzed and she can't do it. My question is,
well, we didn't even talk about, like, that she catches him and he admits that he murdered her.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, yeah. He's like, but my job. It's so funny. His excuse is, but my job. She's like, well, it's a life.
Yeah.
Anyway.
She was gone. There was nothing I could do. So I put her in her car and I drove to the boat ramp. Rolled it out into the lake. I made a terrible mistake, I know that. But tell me, Claire, tell me, what should I have done? Should I sacrifice everything? Our marriage? My work, which I spent my whole life on?
There's so much in this movie that, like, there's so many extra details that I just find, like, you know, I guess in a good movie would help sort of texture it, but in this movie just sort of, like, bogs it down. Like, there's all that stuff about his father, who he's, like, in the shadow of, and, you know, discovered something, and he's not quite as good, and that never comes up. And her, like, musician ex-husband that, you know, we find out about, that never comes up again.
We never see the neighbors.
All red herrings.
Yeah, it's all red herrings. Like, there's a moment where she drops the photograph and it shatters, and then she puts it up, and the camera lingers on the name of the person who took the photo. And I was like, who is that? Is that going to come back?
I read in the IMDb trivia that's just the guy who took the photo for the film. It's like the actual crew member.
What?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
You know, I mean, I guess they're trying to throw us off, but it does...
It's just, it's not an Easter egg if it's front and center.
But what I thought was interesting was, so the bathtub scene, before the bathtub scene happens, there are several scenes where she sees the bathtub filled up right to the brim with water, and presumably the ghost is doing this to, like, send some sort of message to her. Does the ghost know that this is what her husband is going to do? Is that, like, how does the ghost know that?
Yeah.
Does the ghost have a DeLorean? Is this part of some shared Zemeckis verse? Is time travel?
Don't be silly, board. Rob. The ghost is Forrest Gump.
Why run when you could take the Polar Express? It's just, like, all connected. Yeah, no, it's weird. Also, the tub is filled up past the overflow thing.
You
Which
have
is,
to plug that.
Yeah, and they don't.
Yeah.
So that whole scene is kind
we
of...
We know how bathtubs work.
Moot.
Yeah. Also, like, I don't know this for sure, but it's a giant house. I would be surprised if there wasn't a second bathroom. Maybe start using the not haunted bathroom.
Yeah, but it only has a shower.
Yeah.
Take
I don't
want to
stand up to clean
myself.
I like myself,
to relax.
God damn
I like
it.
A good bath, you know? Get some candles out. Watch a movie. Not this one.
That's the other thing, you know, Zemeckis kept saying, like, this was supposed to be his Hitchcock movie. The kind of thing he kept saying in interviews was, like, I want to do a Hitchcock movie, but, like, if Hitchcock had access to digital technology, like today's technology, which, A, no one ever had that complaint about a Hitchcock movie.
Damn, I wish Hitchcock had a Palm Pilot.
Yeah. But also, everything about this movie feels, like, picked apart from Hitchcock movies, except for the dumbest parts, in a way. Like, I mean, the rear window stuff, obviously. And then at a certain point, they're like, well, Hitchcock's famous for shower scenes. Like, can we throw something together with a bath?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Homage.
And then, like, Ebert kind of called him out for this in his review because he said, like, you know, in all the press, he's saying, like, Hitchcock, Hitchcock, Hitchcock. But, like, Hitchcock, like, hated supernatural stories. Like, he never would have done a straight-up ghost story. Like, he would have had, like, what you were describing, Blaine, where, like, it turned out it was the husband the whole time or something. So even that idea, or even this kind of, like, presentation of, like, this is, like, a modern Hitchcock movie, it doesn't ultimately feel like that.
Yeah.
And also, I think the digital tricks they did were... I don't know.
Bad.
sometimes unnecessary. Like the floor thing you said is cool, but that is a Hitchcock shot. Like he did that in the 20s. He didn't have like the CG thing where you see the floorboards before they swap it for a glass floor or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like the core element of it does not need digital trickery, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No. And you could have literally done that shot without digital trickery too. Like, cause there was a carpet right in the way. So I felt like I didn't even know it was digital. Cause I was like, how'd they do that? And I thought that they just pulled the carpet back and that was a trap door to go under. But you didn't need the digital. It's just, yeah, it's a little superfluous, but that tub scene,
Harrison Ford was totally CGI. He refused to come on set. So yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
but the tub scene, I mean, some of it's stupid, like Harrison Ford getting up and then falling back down and then disappearing. I was like, did he crawl out? Did he, like, army man shuffle out? Like, why didn't he just stand up?
He probably has brain damage.
He was the ghost.
Yeah, exactly. But I loved the toe trying to grab the plug, the cord turning off the thing. Like, all that stuff was just, I thought, very, very ingenious, and it felt like someone else wrote it. Like, it came from a different movie. Like, it felt like almost someone, like, wrote that in a different movie, and they were like, we should put that in this movie. That's where it belongs.
We should say, like, it's because he dosed her with the serum that we all knew he was going to, because they spent several minutes describing its effects and the types of animals it, it works on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she couldn't move, and she had to, like, regain her movement through her pinky toes, kind of like Kill Bill.
But it is a good sequence, especially because, like, any of us that has actually had a bath, like, has probably done that out of laziness.
Yeah. Not out of fear. Well, and then the last sequence is, so she gets away, but Harrison Ford sort of jumps on the boat that's being trailed by the truck, and so gets her and sort of gets in the truck, and then they sort of go off the road going through the ghost. They run over the ghost. At least I think that was a ghost. Oh God.
Oh no, Jody.
But then they go off into the lake, and they end up in the car right over the same place where the other car has been driven off, where the woman's body is. And then there's this thing where, like, the boat mass sort of comes down and sort of disturbs the body, so it floats back up. And then I don't know if this is real or what's happening, but it seems to grab Harrison Ford and keep him down there, so he drowns while Michelle Pfeiffer can escape. And he dies, and that's, you know, her revenge, the ghost's revenge.
Yeah, and then she goes and puts flowers on the girl's grave and walks away, and that's the end of the movie. We don't get to see the daughter that went to college, like...
Oh, she never talks to her again.
Yeah, like, what's going on?
I can't explain this. I'm just going to cut contact. Ghosts?
Yeah. There was, like, very little ending. It was so long, and it didn't have an ending.
Yeah, I feel like there should have been, like, a denouement. Like, you know, we should have found out that she was doing all right with her life or something like that. Maybe she's playing the cello again. That would be something. Like, she's back into herself.
Jesus. Anyway.
Yeah. Or the ghost of her husband is, like, now married to the ghost of Madison, who Harrison Ford killed.
Damn you!
I would have been happy. I don't know.
Ghost men are pigs.
Ghost men.
They never return your calls. It's awful.
Okay, well, that was the movie. We're going to be back with trivia, some behind-the-scenes stuff after this break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're back on Rewatchability. We're talking about What Lies Beneath. We just talked about everything that happened in that movie. Ah, man, it's weird. It feels like both nothing happened and too much happened at the same time in this movie. That's weird. It's weird.
Yeah, the pacing's all off. It's just all off.
Okay, I got some trivia for you guys. Okay.
Oh, let's hit us with it.
All right. So remember the daughter that they drop off at college who never comes back?
Hey, yeah.
Barely.
Well, she's played by a woman who's the daughter of a famous screenwriter in real life. She's the daughter of a famous screenwriter. Name that screenwriter.
Is it, what's his name? Robert Town? Is that it?
It is Robert Town.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah.
How did you know that?
I saw her last name was Town.
Oh, you cracked the code.
Yeah, and I know that in Tinseltown, one way to get your foot in the door is by having a famous parent.
I was thinking about that the other day, that that his most famous screenplay is Chinatown, and it's weird, like, you wonder if it started out where he was writing about, like, a family member named China, and it slowly became the classic film we all know.
Well, he's lucky that is, yeah, Catherine's lucky that she didn't end up being Chinatown.
Right? People would keep forgetting her. Okay, question number two. I mentioned it was a big hit movie, but can you guess the budget for this movie?
Hmm.
You know, it's not that... It's set in one house, primarily. There's some effects, but I could see it being made for like $45 to $50 million.
Okay.
Rob, what about you? Price is Right rules.
There are some scenes where Rob Zemeckis just puts in CG for no reason, like when that corpse comes back to life, and there's other stuff too. So I'm going to say $200 million.
Okay, keeping in mind that's what like the Avengers cost.
Yeah. Okay, I'll say $100 million. Wait, what did you say? I'll say whatever Blaine said plus $1. Price is Right rules.
Okay, well, you win either way, because amazingly enough, the budget was $100 million.
Holy fuck, Jesus.
And to put that in
God,
perspective...
God, they could have put $50 million towards cancer or something. Jesus.
And just, I tried looking it up. I couldn't find how they allocated the budget. I mean, not that that would be available online, but I thought there might be some kind of explanation. Like, was it just the cast? Was it those digital effects? But like, to put things in perspective, we should say this was shot during a break for Castaway. Like they had to,
it feels like it was shot during a break.
They had to wait while Tom Hanks grew a beard and lost weight for the time jump in Castaway.
Oh, okay.
So I guess so they wouldn't be rusty, like Robert Zemeckis and the same crew just like basically got a house and Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer and made this movie in the interim. And then they were like done the movie and editing this movie while they resumed Castaway. But like to put the $100 million price tag for this movie in perspective, Castaway, the movie that they were actually trying to make, that they just made this during a break of that film, Castaway cost $90 million. It cost $10 million less than this movie.
What? There was a plane crash in that movie.
I know, right? And another big blockbuster that came out that year was X-Men, came out in 2000. That cost $75 million.
And so many more stars. So many more like salaries to pay on that one.
Well, I mean, it had a lot of effects. Yet. Yeah, they weren't stars. Yeah. Well, I guess some of them were, but I just don't... It boggles the mind. Like, hardly... Is Wendy Crewson that expensive? Like, well, I don't understand.
Okay, that's stupid. That's stupid. It makes me hate this movie.
Last question. What horror movie performance inspired Michelle Pfeiffer while she was making this?
Freddy Krueger. Was it Freddy Krueger? No, go on.
I'm going to say maybe Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, that's a good guess. That's incorrect.
Damn it.
Is it going to be a Hitchcock?
No. No, more recent than Hitchcock.
I don't know. What do you got there, Jam? What is
it? Well, according to TCM, she was inspired, like her scenes where she had to be super afraid and panicky, she was inspired by Drew Barrymore in Scream.
Oh.
Yeah. That's nice.
That's nice.
Sure.
Why not?
Sure.
Well, but I mean, usually like older actresses wouldn't take like mentorship or inspiration from a younger actress necessarily. I think there's like a, you know, sort of like you respect seniority, but not like, you know, a great performance by a junior actor.
That's true. But she'd been acting for a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, she's probably like when she was like 2 months.
She's an old veteran compared to Michelle Pfeiffer.
Right. We mentioned earlier this movie was the screenplay was written by Clark Gregg, who's famous for playing Agent Coulson in the Marvel series.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and also he's in lots of stuff. He was in State in Maine and
other stuff. He's in other stuff good actor, in the Marvel
Clark
universe.
Gregg. You're a good actor.
Yeah, but
I feel bad. I mean, I don't know bad. I don't know if I feel bad for him or good
for him.
Don't
feel bad for him.
I mean, he's got like, you know, he's had a career out of playing like one guy for the last almost 15 years or whatever. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It'd be a bit boring, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, he seems like an interesting guy and he's a good actor. And I guess he just like written a few scripts. Like there was an interview with him recently for the 20th anniversary. And he was basically said he would just wanted to do something other than acting. And he wrote a few scripts and someone gave him this job. It was Sarah Kernochin. Is that how you pronounce it? I'm not sure. Who's like a famous documentarian. I think she even won an Oscar for one of her documentaries.
Oh.
But she was also a screenwriter. She wrote 9 and a Half Weeks and Summersby Strike, a few things. And she wrote kind of I don't know if she wrote a whole script or just a treatment, but like a more personal thing. I've been trying to find some more information on it. I couldn't find that much, but it basically what I saw was that she had like a real life experience that inspired her to write the story about a retired couple that are helped by friendly ghosts. Yeah, so something that doesn't sound that much like this movie. She still has a story credit, but basically Clark Gregg had written a few scripts and like a friend at a studio was like, you know, Spielberg or Zemeckis are kind of circling around this. Do you want to rewrite it as a thriller? And this is what he did. And in the interview he just did, he basically said like, yeah, I haven't even seen it since the premiere. And because he said like, you know, you just kind of see the faults in it. So, but he said he might revisit it for the anniversary. So
but I don't know. I got 7 Marvels to do. So busy man.
Yeah.
Shield keeps
he like, he died in one of them and then he just keeps popping back and they brought him back somehow for the TV show.
That DeLorean. It's that DeLorean again. That's
right. It's the DeLorean driving Phantom from this movie. There was, like I said, there were a few articles this month talking about this movie or you know, just kind of revisiting it. There was, I thought, kind of an interesting article on The Ringer, basically singling out this movie as a worthwhile picture just because it's interesting to see Harrison Ford as a villain.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And he does a good job. Like when he turns full villain, like it's cartoony in the context of the movie, but it does make you think like he could be. You wish he did more varied roles, like he would play kind of a heavy character more often. I don't know. What do you guys think? Did you think he kind of goes full Jack Torrance in the end of this thing? But
yeah, I don't know. I didn't love his performance, and I thought that I would, but I also sort of. I mean, I think it's a good performance and he gives a lot of depth to it, but I don't know if it's like very effective as like a horror villain sort of thing. Like he doesn't become scary or even like menacing, I don't think. I feel like he's very like in the like, I don't know, emotional place. So I found that kind of like, you know, I don't know. What about you, Blaine?
I mean, I think I agree with you, Rob. The interesting thing about his acting is that he, you know, he acts versions of Harrison Ford. Like, I don't know how different Han Solo is from Indiana Jones in terms of like his acting style. and in those roles, him being a little like kooky with his face or like jutty with his movements is kind of fun and personable and makes you appreciate the characters a little bit more because they're like, he's not like this totally perfect guy. He has some sort of comedic aspect to him, but in this movie, like him falling again once he gets back up from hitting his head on the tub, it like there's so many different parts of it where he just seems funny instead of like harrowing. So it's a good performance. I think it's just I can't not see him. I can't, like, not kind of try to laugh with him at things.
Yeah. I do like Harrison Ford for the rest of the movie where he's not evil. Like, when he's just sort of, like, being retired with Michelle Pfeiffer, I find it, like, kind of fun. Like, oh, hey, they're getting randy and, yeah, that's nice. They still got some spark in them, you know? Mm-hmm. I found that fine. But, yeah, I don't know about him as, like, the villain.
What did you think, J.M.?
I thought, you know, I did like him at times as the villain or as the kind of like shitty guy because he has that charm, because he can turn mm-hmm. on the Harrison Ford charm, but then he also can play different notes of that and turn it into something menacing. I mean, I don't think the writing fully supports the performance. I think this is totally accidentally, but I think that the particular character he's playing here does kind of create something interesting in terms of like the meta aspect of the Harrison Ford character, because the things he actually does in this movie sort of inadvertently comment on his past roles. Like, I mean, he's very famous for The Fugitive and like I Didn't Kill My Wife, and the whole third act right. is him trying to kill his wife, which is kind of funny. And then the other thing is, like, it's always been implied and it was, you know, cut out of the movie ultimately, but it's sort of very subtly hinted at that right. Indiana Jones seduces his students. So right. to have a whole movie that's like a horror movie where he seduced and then murdered a student because he's, you know, a professor in this movie, I thought was kind of this weird but interesting, you know, this attempt to kind of turn the Harrison Ford archetype into something toxic and menacing, mm-hmm. I thought was kind of cool, but I'm doing more work than the movie did to like find that nugget of gold. I don't know, but I think it's not without value, but I don't know if the movie itself is successful in a vacuum of the movie, if that makes sense. Like when I saw it first, I didn't really talk about this, but I remember being disappointed by the fact that like half the movie is a red herring and the other half of the movie is just a pretty dull ghost story. And I'd seen so many people talking about, you know, revisiting this movie 20 years later. I thought maybe, like you, Blaine, maybe like there was something in it that I missed or you know, because it was also, like we said, it was targeted at an older age group. So mm-hmm. like I'm closer to Michelle Pfeiffer's age now than I was when I was a kid, obviously.
Every day.
Yeah, every day I'm getting closer and closer until I send my kids off to college and they're like, I'm 7. I'm like, be quiet.
Grow up so fast.
But I still didn't find that much to latch onto here. I still found it kind of frustrating. And partly because it should be so good. Like, it's Robert Zemeckis, who's a great mm-hmm. director. And the whole final sequence, I think, is well done and you know, really milks that suspense. But, like, the whole rest of the movie, we've got Robert Zemeckis, we've got a great cast, we've got this, you know, beautiful setting that's prime for, like, a Hitchcock kind of thriller, but it just doesn't ever gel. Like, it feels like a movie that they made on an extended lunch break rather than a passion project.
Yeah.
I hear you. I think that sequence at the end, very, very good. Michelle Pfeiffer really gives this movie a run for its money, too. Like, I think she does a wonderful job. And it's... Really? You don't agree
with
that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we talked about Michelle Pfeiffer in Wolf a few months ago, back at Halloween. And, like, in this movie, she's just so, like, fragile. And, I mean, I know that's what her character is. But I found it just, like, really hard to care for a protagonist who seems so, like, ineffectual. Like,
interesting.
Like, everything's like right in front of her face and she can't figure out the mystery. Like, you know,
I think that's the character, though.
Yeah. And I felt that was part of like her. I totally get what you're saying, but like you can look at it another way, where the ghost kind of helps her find herself, where the ghost is like, you can be badass, you can be like this person that solves this and brings it together and like to save yourself, whereas
get a groove
I
back.
Couldn't yeah like the ghost is literally inhabits her body to make her like seduce her own husband at one point and to try to kill him and inhabits her body another time to do more things, to like plunge her into the water, which she's afraid of. Like, there's a whole bunch of different things that, like, I feel like the ghost is almost pushing her out of her comfort zone and making her, like, I kind of like that aspect of it. But for 2.5 hours of this movie, she is really, really fragile. I don't know how long this movie is. I think it's 4 hours. But she's really, really fragile. So I get what you're saying, that, like, I just feel like that's a script problem and not an acting problem.
I mean, maybe.
For me, anyway.
Yeah. But I think you're right. I mean, like, it should have been more like, I mean, they imply that he was, like, because he's, like, this fragile man who felt like he could never live up to his father, that he, you know, pushed his career to the detriment of hers. He, you know, kind of made her quit her musical career. Like, all of these things, like, yeah, are paving the way for, like, him to be not only this shitty husband and murderer, but, like, maybe, yeah, like, some kind of, like, it needs to be more like Gaslight or something. Like, I don't know. You know what? Okay, here's a quick rewrite. And, you know,
sorry,
I don't want to,
Craig.
I don't want to second guess Clark Gregg, but here's an idea. We've got this Rear Window set up, right? Where she thinks the neighbor killed his wife. Don't have the neighbors be brand new neighbors. Have them be there for a while. Have her be investigating the guy the whole time. The wife's disappeared. Everything's the same. But in the end, somehow she figures out that the neighbor is innocent and that Harrison Ford was having an affair with the neighbor and that he's the murderer in that way. Then you could tie it all together and you don't have it to just feel like a waste of time.
Yeah, like I kind of thought, like, my first thought when I saw the neighbor, I was like, oh, she's going to hate him. They're going to clash. The Rebar guy. Remar?
James Remar, yeah.
Sorry. Sturdy actor. And so she, when she saw him and, like, interacted with him, it was bad. But then I thought, like, maybe when Harrison Ford died, she would have had interactions with this man and, like, come to, like, enjoy his company, maybe. And maybe his wife was murdered, but not by him, and he's trying to find her, and it was Harrison Ford that murdered. Like,
yeah,
it would have just been, like, a better thing if it
or
was.
Like, he, like, comes, shows up and, like, you know, saves the day or does something crucial or helps her at some point. You, like, even the friend Jody doesn't show up again. Like, I kind of expected her to be, like, you know, rubbed out for no good reason.
No, this is like, if there was a, yeah, this is like the Loose Threads, the movie. It's just
which is, like, you know, it's like, yeah, you expect, like, Jody, the quirky best friend, to, like, get killed, you know, just before the third act or something, which is, would maybe make it obvious or more cliche. But on the other hand, like, those things are obvious and cliche because, you know, filmmakers throw those things in to keep you interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
and this didn't have that. It just kind of, like, yeah, it had an exciting finish, but just kind of lumbered towards it. We already knew Harrison Ford was the bad guy. And like, why didn't they go to the police after she found out that they had an affair? Like,
yeah. The worst part about this is that it's one of the bad things about it is that all the marketing people spoiled the entire movie, and this movie still made $300 million. So, like, it worked. Yeah. Let's keep spoiling movies.
Well, you know, before, like, the sort of new golden age of television, movies just had to be like, here's two people you like. I don't know. It's a ghost or something. Just get out of your house and go see it.
Oh, God. Yeah. So, did you think it was rewatchable, Rob?
No. It was really long, and and I wasn't that interested in the things that happened. And I think intellectually, I think it kind of is interesting. Like, when you put all the details together, you can be like, okay, there's enough flesh in here to make a good story. But I don't think it necessarily presents it in a way that is engaging. And I like movies that are slow and ponderous and, you know, where you have to sort of pay lots of attention and get all the clues and sort of put it together a bit yourself. But this one was just boring, and I couldn't keep engaged. I really found it hard to keep engaged until the bathtub scene, and then I was there, you know. But that was at, like, the 1 hour and 50 minute mark. So
yeah, and I agree with you. Like, everything you try to put together kind of slams in your face, being like, haha, this was absolutely nothing. This meant nothing.
Well,
like,
yeah, at a point you're not even going to try.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes boring because you're not invested or
reward
engaged
us
anymore. Yeah. Yeah, what about you, Jam?
Nope.
Okay, I feel the exact same way.
No, yeah, I, like, I, again, like, they, had all the ingredients to make something great. And yeah, like you said, like there's, it's not like a red herring where it feels like, you know, a red herring has to distract you or misdirect you in the service of like a different story or a twist or something else that's going to come from a different direction and lead you down a path you didn't expect that is fulfilling. A red herring isn't just like something that you drop halfway through and then something boring kind of slowly develops in its wake. You know what I mean? Like there's the, this just felt like, it felt like a small idea that they tried to expand into a long, long movie. And the things that they padded it out with are just so unnecessary. And it's bad. It's a bad movie. I don't know why the people that like it. I, you know, if people do like it and think we're wrong, please, you know, write us or tweet at us. But I don't get it.
I really love what you said there, Jam, because I think that's the fault of this movie, is that it needed like seven more drafts. Like it because when she's investigating, we should be shown these things that we, along her investigation lines, that then come back later, like the phone on the bridge that needs to get to a certain part on the bridge to be able to phone. Like that's just put in a whole scene by itself so that you know. That's the only thing that happens in that scene, where it should have been in an investigative scene, so we don't really pay attention to it. It's just part of the investigation. And then when it comes back, we're like, oh, I remember that, instead of like, I had that written on my face by the director. So like, I couldn't have forgotten it if I wanted to. So
they might as well have had Chris Farley come out and be like, when you get to this part of the bridge, cell phone comes in. Reception's good over here, not so good.
Yeah, watch out about the river. My van's down there. Don't knock it in. Yeah, so I totally agree with you that I just needed to fold all these scenes into each other more and more and more until it was an hour and a half, and we could stomach it.
Yeah, anyway. They should have gotten some of the other future Marvel stars to give it another pass, like Robert Downey Jr. He could have taken a stab at it. Samuel L. Jackson, Brie Larson, any Jackman of these people
could slice it up a bit.
He's not part of the Marvel Universe, Rob.
Oh shit, I forgot. Didn't they make that work somehow? No.
Nope.
Oh nope. Man, I don't know. All right.
Without Hugh Jackman, it's nothing.
I mean,
all right. That should do it. Before Rob says something that gets us in trouble with the Marvel people. Thank
Clark
you so
Greg
much for listening.
Us,
oh my God. I hope he does. He might be recruiting us for something. You can find more episodes at rewatchability.com. You can follow us on Twitter at rewatchability, or like us on Facebook, facebook.com/rewatchability, patreon.com/rewatchability. And until next time, check your, you know, lakefront properties for corpses. That's all I can say.
Good advice.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.